Welcome. My name is John Hennessy. I'm the chief historian at Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. And we today are going to explore Fredericksburg as a city of hospitals. In May of 1864, Julia Wheelock, a Union relief worker, remembered the scene in Fredericksburg. She said that day after day, long trains freighted with human suffering arrived in town. She said all the public buildings, the courthouse, churches, hotels, warehouses, factories, the paper mill, theater, school buildings, stores, stables, and private residences were all turned into hospitals, shelters for thousands and thousands of wounded. The flow of wounded into town continued. The buildings continued to fill up until, she said, Fredericksburg was one vast hospital. Today we're going to explore Fredericksburg as a city of hospitals and look at the sites associated with the town's use as a hospital, not once, not twice, but in fact three times during its history. Now as we go around town, we're going to talk about buildings, of course. We're going to see several surviving buildings that were used as hospitals, and some of them have very vivid stories. But the story of Fredericksburg as a city of hospitals is far more than the story of buildings. It's a story of the relief workers who came at times by the hundreds to help care for the wounded. The residents who were presented with an immense dilemma, faced with the decision of helping thousands of Union wounded or abiding by their growing resentment toward anything Yankee. And of course, the wounded, thousands of them, swamping Fredericksburg with an avalanche of suffering. Three times Fredericksburg was turned into a vast hospital. Once, of course, right after the Battle of Fredericksburg. Again, after the Battle of Chancellorsville. And then finally, and perhaps most spectacularly, in the days and weeks following the Battle of Wilderness in Spotsylvania, when as many as 20,000 Union wounded passed through town, with just 40 or 50 surgeons to help care for them. It's a compelling human story in a compelling landscape. What we're going to do today is a pretty short walk. We will begin here on the lawn of the historic Circuit Courthouse on Princess Anne Street. From here, we will walk north on Princess Anne Street for about two blocks, visiting sites along the way. Then we're going to walk on Amelia Street for a block, and then on Charles Street for three more blocks. In all, the walk is an easy one of about a half a mile. The tour will take, perhaps, an hour to do. So, with that, let's get started. You should be standing in what is known as Courthouse Square. As you face Princess Anne Street, the old Circuit Courthouse is to your left. At the time of the Civil War, the building was only about 10 years old. It was brick, not stuccoed, at the time. But during the war would become at least twice a major hospital. Across the street from you is the Presbyterian Church. We'll talk a little bit about that later. Now, during 4 years of Civil War, there were, of course, four major battles fought in the Fredericksburg area. And during the course of the war, as many as 30,000 wounded Union troops came into town, into a town that was not at all inclined to accept them happily, in a town that had literally no hospital beds available to treat them. And so Army surgeons were forced to improvise. They turned almost every public building in town into a hospital at various times, and many, many private residences as well. The Circuit Courthouse, which is without question one of the most spectacular buildings in town, was used as a field hospital at least two times. The nature of the hospitals in Fredericksburg during the war depended on when they were established. After the Battle of Fredericksburg, virtually all of the hospitals in town were field hospitals, giving primary care to men who had just come off the battlefield, often with horrific wounds that required dramatic treatment. In 1864, during the battles of Wilderness and Spotsylvania, the town of Fredericksburg in its entirety was designated as an evacuation hospital for the thousands, indeed, tens of thousands of Union wounded who fell on those battlefields. So the hospitals here in 1864 were a little bit different. There was not as much primary care going on. The purpose was simply to sustain wounded men and care for wounded men until they could be transported back to Washington by rail and steamboat. But still, whether it be 1862 or 1864, the experience of the surgeons and the scenes within the town were dramatic and often horrific. One surgeon who worked in downtown Fredericksburg remembered his experience here this way.
"We are almost worked to death. My feet are terribly swollen, yet we cannot rest. All day yesterday I worked at the operating table. That was the fourth day I had worked at those terrible operations. It does not seem as though I could take a knife in my hand today, yet there are hundreds of cases of amputation waiting for me. Poor fellows come and beg almost on their knees for the privilege of having the first chance. It is a scene of horror such as I never saw. God forbid that I should ever see another."
In 1864, a Union soldier visited the hospital in the circuit courthouse.
"Every foot of space was appropriated for the wounded, who were laid in rows on the bare floor, with narrow aisles between. The poor boys had neither blanket for cover, blanket or comfort on which to lay their lacerated limbs or bodies. Some were groaning, others screaming in the agony of pain. Some lay perfectly quiet, others tossed from side to side on the floor. Death was ever present to claim its victims. These were carried out just beyond the building, where the grave diggers could be seen through the windows, constantly at their gruesome task."
After the war, three dead were removed from the yard of the courthouse and reburied in the National Cemetery. Across the street from you is the Presbyterian Church, one of the two oldest church buildings in Fredericksburg. It was built in 1833. To many, the Presbyterian Church is in fact the most famous of all the hospitals in Fredericksburg because it has long been assumed to have had an association with Clara Barton. We know for certain that the building was used as a field hospital. In fact, most of the pews were destroyed. One man later said that the insets in the back of the pews, when punched out, made a perfect headboard for burials. But of all the buildings in town associated with the war, few have more legend or misinformation associated with them than does the Presbyterian Church. There's a plaque on the corner across the street that says that General Stonewall Jackson, by General Lee's request, on this corner planned the Battle of Fredericksburg on November 27, 1862. We know now, of course, that Jackson didn't even reach Fredericksburg until November 29th. There are two cannonballs in one of the pillars on the front of the building. We know now that those cannonballs were actually put in place there in the 1880s and are not the result of the battle itself. And then there is the marker to Clara Barton in front of the building. Clara Barton, the founder of the American Red Cross, a devoted nurse and tireless organizer who knew no enemy but the unfeeling heart. We walk the ways she took in easing the suffering at the Battle of Fredericksburg when the churches became military hospitals. Now, the plaque never actually says that Clara Barton did service in the Presbyterian Church, but almost everybody assumes, based on the plaque's location, that she did. In fact, there is no evidence that she was ever in the church, although it's very possible that she did service there. Clara Barton was in Fredericksburg several times during the war, most notably after the First Battle of Fredericksburg, and once again in 1864. As we go along today, we will see several buildings where we know Clara Barton did service, and I'll point those out to you as we go along. But for the moment, the Presbyterian Church needs to go on the list of, well, maybe, might have been. We just don't know for sure. From here, we ask that you walk across Princess Anne Street to the far corner, and then turn north on Princess Anne Street, crossing George Street, and stop in front of the bank building there. Turn your back to the bank building and face St. George's Episcopal Church directly across the street. Start your prayer again once you're there. You should now be standing on the sidewalk opposite St. George's Episcopal Church. The congregation here is the oldest in Fredericksburg, being formed just a few years after the founding of the town in the 18th century. At the time of the Civil War, this was still a thriving congregation. In fact, the sanctuary of this church is the biggest and perhaps the most impressive of all the historic churches in downtown Fredericksburg. As the fighting just west of town raged on December 13, 1862, wounded Union soldiers poured into town, some hauling themselves along, others being helped by friends, and some on stretchers or in makeshift wagons. The flood of wounded was especially heavy in this part of town, where both Hanover and George Street led directly from the battlefield. Almost every building on this part of Princess Anne Street was turned into a field hospital, and of them all, probably the Episcopal Church was the largest. A member of the Union Irish Brigade remembered that the brigade's hospital was set up here in the Episcopal Church, and this soldier left behind a vivid memory of what was going on in some of the downstairs rooms.
8 operating tables were in full blast. The floor was densely packed with men whose limbs were crushed, fractured, and torn. Lying there in deep pools of blood, they waited very patiently. There was no grumbling, no screaming, hardly a moan. Many of the badly hurt were smiling and chatting. One, who had both legs shot off, was cracking jokes with an officer who could not laugh, for his lower jaw was shot away. The cases here were nearly all capital, and amputation was almost always resorted to. Hands and feet, arms and legs were thrown under each table, and the sickening piles grew larger as the night progressed. Towards morning, the conversation flagged. Many dropped off to sleep before they could be attended to, and many of them never woke again.
Not a few of those men would not survive the ordeal, and another soldier remembered walking on the sidewalk outside the Episcopal Church on the evening of December 13th. He said he saw dead soldiers piled on either side as high as the top step of the church, and on the fence next to the church were hanging belts, cartridge boxes, canteens, and haversacks. In 1864, the Episcopal Church again saw service, this time as part of the vast evacuation hospital here in Fredericksburg. A reporter for a northern newspaper passed by the church in May of 1864.
In the Episcopal Church, a nurse is bolstering up a wounded officer in the area behind the altar. Men are lying in the pews, on the seats, on the floor, on boards on the top of the pews. 2 candles in the spacious building throw their feeble rays into the dark recesses, faintly disclosing the recumbent forms. There is heavy, stifled breathing, as of constant effort to suppress involuntary cries extorted by the acutest pain. Hard it is to see them suffer and not be able to relieve them.
The Episcopal Church is the only church in town whose pews survived intact from the war. That's simply because they were fixed in place. They were nailed down and could not easily be removed. But the pews of a chapel or lecture room in the basement of the church were easily torn out. And in fact, in 1864, they were used for coffins and bedsteads. The carpeting in the church and the cushions were used as bedding for the wounded. The destruction was everywhere in Fredericksburg. Most of the churches in town made financial claims to the federal government for damages done by the Union Army during the use of the churches as hospitals. St. George's made a claim for almost $3,000, mostly for the loss of cushions and carpeting. One of the challenges with these claims was that the churches had to demonstrate that they had been loyal during the war, not an easy task for most of them. The Episcopal Church, though it claimed nearly $3,000, received only $900. Amidst all the horror and all the suffering here, there were still attempts to raise the spirits of the men. In fact, it was often so that the men attempted to raise their own spirits. A reporter passing by here in May of 1864 recorded this scene.
Passing a church occupied as a hospital, we hear the music of an organ. Entering the building, with every pew and aisle crowded with wounded, we saw in the organ loft a group of men with their arms in slings, one of whom was fondling the organ keys. Presently, as we stood there in the gloom, down from the gallery and along the aisles floated the notes of Home Sweet Home. Sobbing, sighing, the spirit of the song seemed to fill all the place. Bandaged hands touched eyes unused to weeping. The music ceased at last, and for a little time all was still.
From here, just walk north on Princess Anne Street for about 100 yards until you are standing on the sidewalk opposite the historic town hall, the brick building on the corner of William Street and Princess Anne Street. Once there, turn your player back on. You should be standing in front of Old Town Hall, today part of the Fredericksburg Area Museum. Before the war, this building was used for many things. The local chapter of the YMCA met here regularly. A newspaper was published from the building. The town's library was here. The area behind the building was Market Square, where vendors would come to sell their wares. It was from this building that the mayor and town leaders in 1862 responded to the presence of the Union Army, trying to avoid the very horrors that ultimately would settle upon the town. As we stand on Princess Anne Street today with all of its bustle, it's hard to imagine just how depressing, how consumptive, how total was the transformation of this town into a vast hospital. Every church, every store, every dwelling, said one man, every dooryard was crowded with wounded. Even the sidewalks were occupied in many places by exhausted soldiers on their way from the field in search of shelter and assistance. Walking at any hour of the day, he said, groups of soldiers with arms and faces bandaged, with feet limping painfully, met us at every corner. One reporter in town noted there was a tremendous lack of crutches. He said, this morning I saw a soldier hobbling about with the arms of a settee nailed to the strips of a board. His regiment went home today, its 3 years of service having expired. The disabled comrade could hardly keep back the tears as he saw them pass down the street to go home. Now, the town hall here was in fact used as a hospital. We know most about it during its use during the Battle of Fredericksburg in 1862. On one of the nights after the battle, a Union artilleryman stumbled into town hall. He was looking, in fact, for plunder, for loot. He freely admitted it, but what he found was very different.
Off in the dark in pursuit of plunder, almost the first thing we fell over was a pile of legs, arms, and feet that our doctors had amputated the day before. We left that room satisfied, lit a candle, and went into another room filled with dead men, mostly rebels. We had seen enough. Piling books on the floor for a pillow, we lay down and tried to sleep, but it was no use. The situation was not pleasant.
Indeed, unpleasantness was almost everywhere. We'll continue on our walk now. Cross William Street, continue on Princess Anne Street until you are standing on the sidewalk opposite the Baptist Church, the large church at the corner of Amelia and Princess Anne Street. Once there, turn your player back on. In front of you is the Fredericksburg Baptist Church. It moved to this site in 1855, so the church was still fairly new when war visited the place in 1862. As the fighting exploded west of town that day, Union surgeons turned almost every building around this intersection into a hospital. Foremost among them, of course, was the Baptist Church. Soldiers swarmed into the sanctuary on the second floor of the church and pitched the seats, the pews, the furniture, and almost everything else that was in the way out the windows and onto the sidewalk below. With the church cleared, wounded started to arrive. It's very likely that most of the primary care was given on the ground floor in a small chapel that existed there. After the wounded were treated, they were taken upstairs to the main sanctuary, and by day's end, probably hundreds of men were jammed into that space. A Union surgeon came to the place that evening and described what he saw and what he did.
Here I labored, dressing wounds until dark, the church floor being covered with Union wounded. Soon after dark, candles were lighted. But after a brief quiet, a solid shot came crashing through the church walls, knocking the plastering in a furious shower over patients and surgeons. Lights were ordered out. All surgery ceased, and the surgeons labored in the dark to render the wounded comfortable.
Clara Barton would do service in this church during the Battle of Fredericksburg. It is one of four buildings in town that we can certainly document her presence. Another, by the way, is the building just to the right of the church as you're looking at it. That was the home of a woman named Maria Wolfe, and Clara Barton's nephew, who was a relief worker, was brought here in 1864 after falling ill. Clara Barton visited him in this building. Now, in 1863, once again, after the Second Battle of Fredericksburg, the Baptist Church would be used again as a hospital, and again, the scenes would be heartrending. One soldier remembered seeing two bodies lying outside the door covered with blankets. He said, "The place is full to repetition, and it requires much control to look around upon its occupants." And again, in 1864, Union surgeons took the place over. By now, it was already a wreck. Hospital workers needed only to cast aside some of the debris left by earlier uses. One surgeon remembered that the tank intended for baptism was used as a bathing tub for the wounded, and operations were performed in the pastor's small study back of the pulpit. One soldier who was cared for here at this church in May of 1864 wrote home that between 7 and 9 men died every day. But still, he remembered, the men did their best to make things tolerable. It would make you laugh to hear the boys here. They are talking and sporting all the time. All the time that I've been here, I have never heard one man lament anything but his pains. I have not heard anyone lament the loss of their limbs. And there is many here that has lost legs and arms and some an eye. There is something about soldiers that is singular indeed, he said. But more commonly from soldiers came simply the recitation of death. A soldier here in May of 1864 remembered, "The poor Yanks are still dying. Some of them dies hard and some of them dies easy. One died yesterday. There is one poor one laying by my side. He's been dying for the past 6 or 8 hours, and he's not dead yet. I am afraid that he is not prepared to die. I have heard him swear like a trooper, and a chaplain came to him, but he cut him off and said he should not bother with him." And as at other hospitals in town, soldiers tried to brighten their circumstances as best they could. Julia Wheelock, one of the female relief workers who came here in 1864, remembered this scene in the Baptist church.
"While distributing my crackers and soup to the inmates of a large church, where there are perhaps 150 or 200 poor sufferers, my ears were saluted with the voice of song. And looking around to see from whom it came, I saw a poor fellow with a severe wound in both arms. He was sitting on the floor and leaning against the wall, singing as cheerfully and apparently as joyously as if he were seated at the hearth with his own dear family. It was a scene which brought tears to my eyes, for the voices of song strangely mixed with the dying groans."
The church was largely ruined and rendered useless by the war. In fact, for the last 3 years of the war, no services could be held here. This church filed for damages of $3,000 after the war. In supporting that claim, one member of the congregation wrote to the government, remembering what he had seen. "I came back the morning after the battle. I saw arms and legs in the rear of the building, and there was blood on the floors and mattresses inside and outside of the whole building. The pews had all been taken out of the building and broken up. There was not a whole bench in the place to be found. They had been used for firewood, and there was evidence that they had been removed with axes. The building was in such condition that it could not be used for church purposes until after it was repaired." And so it went in Fredericksburg, a city of hospitals and a great place of destruction. From here, turn left on Amelia Street, walk one block to Charles Street, and turn left once again. Go down Charles Street until you are about 50 yards short of its intersection with William Street. Stop there and turn your machine back on. You should now be standing about 50 yards short of the intersection of Charles Street and William Street. There are two things we want to point out to you here. First is the old brick warehouse that stands on the east side of the street where you are now. This brick warehouse and the landscape around it was really the focal point for many of the relief workers that came to Fredericksburg in 1864 to care for the massive numbers of wounded who were here. In fact, the conditions in Fredericksburg stimulated one of the largest relief efforts ever staged in America up to that time. As many as 500 workers came from all over the North to Fredericksburg trying to help, most of them men, but some of them women. A photographer came here in 1864 as well and took a series of photographs, both of wounded and of the workers here to help them. And many of those photographs were taken in the yard behind this brick warehouse along Charles Street. The relief workers who came here faced some real challenges, not the least of which was a hostile population who was not inclined to give them shelter and assistance. That left some of the relief workers to improvise their own shelters. A delegate of the United States Christian Commission remembered, "I was obliged to build my own sleeping room, which I did by tipping over two large boxes in the garden, one for my head and one for my feet, laying boards between them and stretching some matting over them. My house did very well, except in rainstorms, when it was somewhat leaky. I lodged there for a week." Two organizations led the relief efforts in Fredericksburg, the United States Christian Commission and the United States Sanitary Commission. As the name implied, the Christian Commission had as its intent not just the physical care of soldiers, but also their spiritual care. The United States Sanitary Commission was focused far more on food and the physical sustenance of soldiers, not just wounded soldiers, but any soldiers. But here, delegates from the two commissions mingled, worked together, and tried to solve the immense problem of the thousands of wounded that flooded Fredericksburg. For several days in 1864, one of the great problems in Fredericksburg was a lack of food, a lack of supplies. Rain had disrupted the ability of the Union Army to get supplies and food to Fredericksburg, and so the burden was borne by the relief workers who came here. Clara Barton described the situation.
"My heart sickens. Such streets full of dying men, such trains of wounded, such packed churches and old hotels crowded with agony. And worse than all, to the inquiry, 'What have you to eat?' Nothing. I looked on and broke crackers in two to feed to starving men."
The shortage of food would last only a few days before supplies were flowing into Fredericksburg once again. Now, turn and look to the other side of the street. The large 3.5-story building that you see there is the historic Planner's Hotel. In 1864, this was by far one of the most important of all the hospitals in Fredericksburg. Most of the soldiers here were from the Union 9th Corps, and many of them were from Michigan. Clara Barton was here. She found almost 400 men packed into this building. The women, and most of the men who came to Fredericksburg as relief workers, didn't practice nursing in the way that we think of it today. Mostly, they gave comfort to wounded men, brought them food, pillows, often wrote letters for them. Julia Wheelock, a relief worker who came to town in 1864, left a vivid record of her experience here in the form of letters. She visited Planner's Hotel, in fact came here on May 15th, carrying, she said, chicken soup for 400 men. After feeding the men, she went among them, talking to them, trying to cheer them.
"I tried to speak encouragingly to them, having been requested to do so by the surgeon, Dr. Fox. Yet it seems almost wrong to endeavor to inspire with hope of recovery those for whom nearly all hope had fled."
The scenes that these relief workers saw were ones they would never forget. Remember, most Americans had never even seen a gunshot wound before the Civil War. And now, these civilians, coming from a background that included oftentimes no medical experience at all, were seeing some of the most horrific scenes possible. The demands on caregivers, the relief workers, were many and varied. Sometimes food, sometimes comfort, sometimes helping a soldier communicate with home, often for the last time. Julia Wheelock recorded her encounter with a grievously wounded Union captain in 1864. The captain asked her if she wouldn't write a few lines to his mother.
"Taking the address, I inquired whether there was anything in particular he wished me to write. I shall never forget the expression as he looked up and said, 'Oh, give her some encouragement, but tell her I'm trusting in God.' He hesitated a few moments and then added, 'It will be so hard for my mother, for she is a widow, and I am her only son.' I tried to speak a few words of comfort, telling him that if his trust was in God, all would be well. But in a moment the thought of the anguish that would soon pierce that mother's heart rushed upon my mind, and I could only bow my head and weep."
From here, we're going to cross William Street and continue on down Charles Street for two blocks to its intersection with Hanover Street. Once at the corner of Hanover and Charles, note the yellow building on the corner and turn your player back on. You should now be standing on the corner of Charles Street and Hanover Street. Hanover Street, of all the streets leading into Fredericksburg, probably carried more wounded from the Battle of Fredericksburg in 1862 than any other. Probably every building along this street was turned into a field hospital. One Union chaplain remembered a harrowing scene in one of the brick buildings on the far side of Hanover Street. He was in the basement of one of the houses ministering to the wounded. When he came upon a young soldier, still a boy, he said, named William Wicks, he was wounded in the groin. The soldier recognized the chaplain right away, and, as the chaplain wrote, his groaning was loud and heartrending. "Chaplain," he said, "why don't you kill me? It is cruel to let me suffer so. It would be mercy to kill me," the soldier begged him. The chaplain could hardly stand this. "I tried to compose him," he said. "Medicine was given to deaden the pain, but it was of little avail. He knew he must die. I knelt by his side, offered a short prayer, and did all to make his suffering less excruciating. He was soon afterward removed to another hospital where, I suppose, he died." Across the street from you, the large yellow house was, in 1864, the home of the town's mayor, a man named Montgomery Slaughter, and his wife, Eliza. In 1864, the house only had two stories. The third story was added right after the war. The house itself was a little bit uncommon for a home in Fredericksburg in 1864. One visitor to Fredericksburg remembered the house as remarkable simply because it had furniture in it. Eliza Slaughter was an embittered woman by 1864, embittered by war, embittered by Yankees. One of them said of Eliza Slaughter that she was as haughty as a rebel woman could be. And, the observer noted, the vulgar Yankees were excessively offensive to her. She had seen enough destruction, including the wide-scale destruction of their old home on Amelia Street, that when Union relief workers, including Julia Wheelock, appeared at her door one evening seeking shelter, she at first tried to refuse, finally yielded, but only offered them a place on her carpet in her parlor. The next morning, a Union captain heard about this and paid Mrs. Slaughter a visit. "I understand these ladies lay on the floor last night. That was an oversight on your part, of course," he said to Mrs. Slaughter. "You will be good enough to have some beds brought for them now, won't you?" Soon the beds appeared. It often took a good deal of persuasion to convince local women to open their houses for Union relief workers or for Union wounded, but not so for Confederate wounded. Though there were not a lot of Confederate wounded carried into Fredericksburg in 1864, those who came received an open-armed welcome from local women. One local resident remembered taking in a Confederate soldier and had the unpleasant task of writing to that soldier's wife after he had died. He told her that her husband, a man named Nathan Boone, had lived for 10 days after he was brought to his house. And this, he said, was a great deal due to the young and old ladies of this place for their kind attention to our wounded. For they sat by Mr. Boone all day and nursed him as attentively as they could. The ladies never permitted a flea to light on him, and I assure you, Mrs. Boone, all was done for Mr. Boone that could be. Women on both sides worked hard to ameliorate the suffering of the soldiers that came under their care. By 1864, women in the Fredericksburg community could do little to improve their own lives. The opportunity to save or sustain a fading life was one they embraced whenever they could. From here, walk across Hanover Street and turn left. Walk down just beyond the Methodist Church and walk into the grassy lawn just to the east of the church. Once there, turn your player back on. You are standing at what was the gateway for hundreds, if not thousands, of wounded men into Fredericksburg in both 1862 and 1864. Next to you is the Methodist Church. Now, the building that stands here today dates to about 1888, but an earlier version of the church stood on this very spot during the Civil War. Just to the south, or as you're facing the Methodist Church, to your left, is Old St. Mary's Catholic Church. Today it's a law office, but it's the original building that stood here in 1862. In fact, in 1862, the building was just 4 years old. And just beyond St. Mary's Catholic Church stood what was Citizens Hall, the town theater. All three of these buildings, the Methodist Church, St. Mary's Catholic Church, and Citizens Hall, would become major hospitals in both 1862 and 1864. The scene along Hanover Street and the streets around it were vividly described by a survivor of the Battle of Fredericksburg.
For 8 long hours, the streets were crowded with the mutilated victims of Saturday's fighting. Many are leaning for support on those but slightly wounded, and thousands are being borne along on stretchers and in ambulances. All are more or less mangled. Some have lost their legs, some their arms, hundreds with wounded heads. One poor fellow seemed to have lost both eyes. In one instance I saw a man, but slightly wounded, carrying another upon his back. And yet from all these bleeding, suffering thousands, I have not heard a groan or a complaint.
It is likely that thousands of Union wounded soldiers passed by where we're standing today. From here they found their ways into hospitals along Hanover Street, along Princess Anne Street, and indeed, even into places like hardware stores and pharmacies, any place that offered shelter, any place that offered space for a physician to work. The scene was only slightly less hectic here in 1864, as Union wounded from the wilderness in Spotsylvania poured into town on Hanover Street. They soon filled the Methodist Church, and a civilian relief worker, Cornelia Hancock, who had also done service at Gettysburg, arrived at this place.
On arriving here, our two surgeons were paralyzed by what they saw. Rain had poured in through the bullet-riddled roofs of the churches until our wounded lay in bloody pools of water. On these scenes, the doctors gazed in horror and seemed not to know what to do. My Gettysburg experience enabled me to take hold. The next morning, we had the pews knocked to pieces, under the backs and seats put a cleat, and made little beds to raise the wounded from the floor. 'Tis true the beds have no springs, but it keeps them from lying in the water. An amputating table is improvised under a tree in the yard where these two good men work tirelessly.
The scenes that these relief workers saw were unlike anything they had ever seen. And the dilemmas that they faced in caring for these men were unlike anything that they had ever experienced before. Julia Wheelock visited the wounded in the town's theater, Citizens Hall, which stood just beyond St. Mary's Catholic Church. The simple act of bringing soup and pillows and crackers to these men presented Julia Wheelock with what seemed like to be an insolvable dilemma. She remembered,
"Among the hospitals I have visited today is the old theater. I took a quantity of pillows, chicken soup, and crackers. The moment I entered the hospital, oh, what a begging for pillows, came from all parts of the room. Please give me a pillow. I'm wounded in the head, and my knapsack is so hard," said one. Another wants one for the stump of his arm or leg. "I don't think it would be so painful if only I had a pillow or cushion or something to keep it from the hard floor. There, that small one will do for me. Please, lady, let me have that." For a few moments I stood with the pillows in my arms, unable to decide what to do. I could not supply all, and to whom should I give?
Before we conclude our reflections on the city of hospitals, let me say a little bit about medical care during the Civil War. There is no subject in American history cloaked in more mythology than Civil War medicine. Many people have a perception that a visit to the doctor meant sure death during the Civil War. In fact, just the opposite is true. Most of the physicians who did service during the war, and there were somewhere around 18,000 of them on both sides, most of those physicians practiced their art at the highest level they possibly could. They knew not many of the things that we know today. They knew none of germ theory, knew nothing at all of the source of infection. They did things that seem to us to be almost barbaric today. But in fact, they saved tens of thousands of lives. They generally were far more careful than we imagine them to be. If you were wounded in the arm, It was not an automatic thing that you would have your arm amputated. And if you did have your arm amputated, you were certainly not going to have it amputated without the benefit of anesthesia, whether you be Union or Confederate. The number of major operations done during the Civil War without anesthesia is small indeed. The vast majority on both sides had the benefit of anesthetics. And if you did have your arm amputated, the chances that you would survive were quite good, not quite bad. There were almost always complications from surgeries, almost always infections, but most men, in fact, survived. The surgeons of the Civil War often worked themselves almost to the point of collapse. They often presented gruesome spectacles, covered as they were with blood, their own eyes haggard and tired from long hours at the operating table. But despite the gruesome images, and despite the wrong-headed legends that surround Civil War medicine, the fact is that surgeons, physicians of the American Civil War period saved tens of thousands of lives. Gruesome, horrid it often was, but life-saving it was as well. This concludes our tour today. We're just about a half a block from the courthouse from where the tour began. Walk out to a Princess Anne Street once again, turn left, and in just half a block, you'll see the courthouse. We hope that you'll consider taking or listening to some of our other podcast tours. We're going to be expanding the list constantly over the coming years. Check back often to see what we have to offer. And if there's something you'd like us to do that we haven't done, let us know. You can always contact us through our website, www.nps.gov/FRSP. Thank you once again for joining us today. We look forward to joining with you again.